Greetings and salutations, everybody. We are the Uninformed Gamers, and we are here for another episode. And with me, as always, is my awesome co-host. We have Darkness Tiger, also known as Devin.
I don't know if I'm awesome, but I appreciate that.
Oh, don't sell yourself short. You are pretty damn awesome in my book.
I'm worth a quarter, but I'd sell myself for a nickel.
And today we are missing the iChameleon Eye as he has prior engagements, so it'll just be the dynamic duo today. But that doesn't mean we don't have a lot to talk about or interesting things to talk about. So, with that being said, what has been going on in your world?
Oh, well, as everybody knows, I am a big fan of Formula One. So this past weekend was the Formula One race in Miami. And Mason, I actually had the opportunity to attend that race. Unfortunately, I declined because it was too expensive. But okay. I was actually in Miami the week prior and I could have stayed, but $2,000 just for a weekend event did not sit well with me.
Wow, that expensive, huh?
Yeah, it's not really a cheap event or a cheap venue. But you know what? It's an opportunity. But I am going to a Formula One event in June in Canada, so I'm super excited.
Yeah, I would say so.
And in regard to the video game realm, I downloaded quite a few things. I haven't really had an opportunity to play them.
What did you download?
I downloaded the Last Case of Benedict Fox. I downloaded Redfall. Again, haven't had an opportunity to play it. And I downloaded Coffee Talk. I talked about that in the last episode. But I just – finding the time to play a new game is
– Yeah. Different. Yeah, I'm right there with you. I personally have not played any, like, new games. I haven't had the time. So I can definitely relate.
Yeah, but I've been able to play some Assassin's Creed Valhalla, even though I'm realizing this is going to be a slog because I don't love the story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I was growing up, Vikings used to be a big thing for me. I used to love the Viking story.
Yeah.
But now, in Assassin's Creed world, Assassin's Creed and Vikings really does not mix, in my opinion.
Yeah, because, like, assassins are, you know, more stealthy and they're very subtle, whereas Vikings are the polar opposite of that.
Exactly. Like for Assassin's Creed Odyssey, I am a big fan of Greek mythology. Yes. And so it was more leading into that I enjoyed the game. And since I really don't care too much about Vikings and their story right now, having to play an Assassin's Creed game that isn't Vikings induced is not as much fun. Like, it's a great Vikings game. It's a weird Assassin's Creed game to me.
That's understandable. I mean, while we're on the topic of Vikings and things of that nature, there is a anime called Vinland Saga that I highly recommend to anybody. If you are even remotely interested in Vikings or Nordic culture or anything of that sort, I highly recommend watching it. Season 2 is currently airing of that show. So if you're interested, highly, 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 highly recommend it.
All right. Well, thank you. We appreciate that. Be sure to let me text me the name of it. I'll
post it on sure. It's also on Netflix and Crunchyroll, so it's on multiple different platforms.
You know, I really wanted to get into watching more anime, but the problem is like, I don't have Crunchyroll, and I don't feel like getting another subscription to manage.
No, I feel that.
And then plus, there's just so many animes. I don't even know where to start anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can be your anime guru.
You really can. You are an anime person on this podcast, the Uninformed Gamers.
Yeah, so, if you ever need any recommendations or are kind of like hesitant as to where to start or start back up, rather, I can definitely help you with that because I'm not one of those like anime suggesters that are just like they pick out like the longest series to recommend. They're like, oh, you should watch One Piece or Naruto or Dragon Ball Z. It's just like no, those are way too long.
Yeah, like I need just like a good 3 or 4 seasons.
Yeah,
but as I'm watching like more Korean movies and more Japanese movies, you know what I'm discovering?
What's that?
I like the ones that are like drama and the ones that are like
yes.
kind of sad. I'm not, I enjoy like the action of animes, but like I want to see one where I feel something at the end.
Yeah, 100%, dude. Like, my wife Jackie, she reads a lot of webtoons, and a lot of the authors, you know, are like Korean, and I believe they're considered manhwas.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken, I think that's the terminology for the like dramatic webtoon novels, quote unquote. I think that's pronounced manhwa. It's like MANWHA, I want to say.
I've never heard that term before, but to be fair,
I could be wrong. I could be talking out of my ass.
No, you could also be right, but I can't verify that.
Yeah, I want to say that's correct, man.
But besides that, what have you been up to in this realm?
Well, like I said prior, I haven't really been gaming too much, but I don't remember if I mentioned this on the last episode, but I went to Chicago.
Oh, no, I don't think you mentioned that.
Now my wife and I went to Chicago, saw this Japanese band called Rad Wimps. They are very good. They do a lot of music in anime movies by this director by the name of Makoto Shinkai. He's basically like the next Hayao Miyazaki, if you will.
Yeah.
He's a very up-and-comer. Does a lot of like slice of life / drama films that are, you know, animated. And he likes to use this artist by the name of Rad Wimps to do like the music. So I discovered that they would be performing in Chicago. So we went there, spent a nice weekend there. And then the most interesting thing I would say that we did there was we discovered this food place on, I believe it was Instagram, on like a clip. It was like, you can get sushi in a pizza box.
Okay.
And basically, I want to say it was around 60-ish individual rolls of sushi for around $100.
So did you buy $100 worth of sushi?
Yes. Yes, I did. And we had no regrets.
I would hope not. I'm not going to go ahead and spend $100 on sushi then say I regretted it publicly.
No. It was good. It was. I was a little bummed out that I couldn't enjoy it fully because, like, for some reason, my stomach was, like, acting up before we had the sushi. I just was not feeling, like, 100%. Mm-hmm. So I was only able to eat, like, six or so, like, individual rolls. Yeah. And then I was feeling a lot better like the day after. Mm-hmm. So I was able to eat a lot more the day after. Wasn't as good, but it was still very tasty the day after.
All right, well, that's very fair. But let's go ahead and let's get into our very first topic. And I might have mentioned this like probably last year on one of the podcast episodes about how I'm done going to the movie theaters.
I do remember you saying that.
And the reason being, it's too expensive. It's too much of a hassle. You go, you get a popcorn. The popcorn's $15. The ticket's $15. Before you look up, it's $30. You have all these trailers. And then I immediately backtracked to go see Top Gun Maverick.
And then we saw, you know, John Wick 4.
Which, by the way, apparently in John Wick 4, I read this today, Keanu Reeves did his own driving stunts.
Yeah, I mean, he does a lot of his own stunts.
But he had Tanner Faust on speed dial, but he said, no, we're good. I'll do it myself.
Yeah. He's, if I'm not mistaken, Keanu Reeves is also into, like, competitive racing.
Oh, I 100% believe that. He is the guy.
Because I know he owns a, like, a motorbike, and he competes with it.
Well, he owns a motorbike company as well. But
oh,
like,
does he?
Yeah, and I looked up, because like I'm a fan of Keanu Reeves, and plus I have a few motorcycles myself. I looked up the price, and it was in the hundreds of thousands of dollars range.
I believe that. I mean, he's got the money to afford it.
he sure does, and I can't afford it myself. But obviously, I backtrack, because I go and I see the biggest movies of the time. I skip over Ant-Man, because I don't really care about the Ant-Man
series. Yeah, I don't either. I'm kind of like marveled out. You know, like I personally have Marvel fatigue.
Yeah, I do as well, and I'm sick and tired of watching Marvel. I'm sick and tired of seeing Star Wars. I'm more excited for the new films. I talked about seeing Dungeons and Dragons, which I thoroughly enjoyed.
Yeah, we saw that too, and that was a blast. I had a fun time with that movie.
I did. I did go in on an edible, so that kind of helped.
Hey, there you go.
But I thoroughly enjoyed that. I thoroughly enjoyed Everything Everywhere All at Once.
But I still need to watch that.
You do. But yesterday, because it was Tuesday, I ventured out to go see a movie on discount, and that movie was Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Well, at least you saw it on a discount.
Yeah, I wasn't going to pay full price. However, I still ended up paying full price, and do you know why?
Concessions?
Nope. 3D XD, like, cinema.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, because before I bought the ticket, I saw that they had a 3D version. And since I'm a person who wears, like, glasses to actually see anything, mm-hmm. I'm always hesitant about 3D movies.
I am as well. I've never seen a good 3D movie.
Same. And some of the listeners might disagree. Like, oh, we just need to take our glasses off. No. If I take my glasses off and put on the 3D glasses, I cannot see the movie. Like, it's just visually, it's a waste of time for me visually. Mm-hmm. So I actually have to put the glasses on over my actual glasses. And so before I went, I saw that it was in 3D. And I was like, you know what? Let me Google this. Let me see. Is Marvel or is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 worth it to see in 3D? And on a scale of 35, so one being like terrible and 35 being mm-hmm. Do you know what Marvel Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 got?
A 5.
A 34.
Wow, really?
An almost perfect score. So I'm like, you know what? If this is almost perfect score, let me go ahead and let me check it out. So I will tell you that this is probably one of the best 3D movies I've ever seen. And I saw Avatar in 3D.
Okay.
And everybody knows my feelings on Chris Pratt. Don't care for him at all. As an actor or as a human.
Yeah.
But I will say, I'm going to just give you right now, I'm giving Guardians of the Galaxy probably a 4.5 out of 5.
Really?
I really enjoyed the movie because it wasn't that story. It was the Rocket Raccoon story.
Okay, so like Star-Lord and company were kind of like taking a back seat.
Well, sort of, kind of. Like they were the ones who were like leading the movie on, but it was like you got so much backstory about why Raccoon is the way that Rocket is the way he is.
Because he's a like an experiment, correct?
Yes. So it talks about like how he came to be, the entirety of the whole. Basically, it was like a Wolverine origin story.
Yeah.
And so it had a lot of heart. It had a great soundtrack. It was funny. I enjoyed Chris Pratt in it because I guess I like him as Star-Lord. Mm-hmm. I don't like him as anything else. And I really thoroughly enjoyed this movie. Now, I want to say it was in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1, they kind of teased Adam Warlock at the...
I vaguely remember that.
I do not see why he was in this movie.
What was there any point or?
Nope. I feel like his entire purpose was building up for one scene and one scene only.
Just like fan service, kind of, or
I don't even know if it's fan service. Like, I don't know. A lot of people was like, "Oh yeah, we need to see Adam Warlock." It just seemed like he was just in the movie to be in the movie because they teased him, but I don't think he added or took away anything from the film.
Okay.
And they have two. They had a mid-credit scene and an end-credit scene. The mid-credit scene was cute. The end-credit scene was kind of dumb, and I probably need to Google as to the meaning behind it because I didn't understand if there was a meeting. But I am thoroughly impressed. I think James Gunn did an amazing job because wasn't this his last Marvel film?
I believe so. Before, because he's moving to DC.
Yes, he's moving to DC, and if this is James Gunn's best work, I truly believe the DC universe is in good hands. I am giving Marvel Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 a 4.5 uninformed gamer score out of 5. I would give it a perfect 5 if it wasn't for Chris Pratt.
Understood.
And also there was the whole Gamora thing. And if this isn't a spoiler alert, because you know that she's in the film, The whole Gamora thing I never felt was fully explained well, and they don't explain it well in the movie either.
What, how like she, I guess, loses her memory or whatever?
Well, how she comes back to life and loses her memory.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because in the film, they're just like, well, we don't really know how you came back. Apparently, you like were thrown off the cliff in like a what are the stones called? Infinity
Yeah,
Stone.
the Infinity Stones.
And somehow everybody remained dead except for you. And I'm like, that's not an explanation.
No, that's just like throwaway.
Yeah, it was a throwaway. But I will say, if you're a fan, even if you're burnt out on Marvel movies, I think this is the one a person should watch. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Absolutely see it in 3D, because there was an actual couple times with the 3D I was like, oh, they are really coming off the screen here.
That's awesome to hear, actually. I'm kind of hyped about that. That's
Yeah.
cool.
There was one scene where it's like they're like flying in like space, and like it's a bunch of bad guys flying in space, and the guy literally flew up from the chair in front of me. I was like, oh shit. I was that surprised.
That's so cool. That's great. I love it.
Yep. So definitely be sure to go out and see Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Support James Gunn's last film. Thoroughly enjoyed it. You can stay for the mid-credit scene. Don't worry about staying for the end-credit scene. In my opinion, not worth it.
Well, that is very good to know. Thank you.
No problem. Now let's go ahead. Let's move over to our next story. And this one is coming from Game Freak.
Yeah, which should sound familiar to our listeners because Game Freak is ubiquitously known for doing Pokemon. And they have stepped outside of doing that because if you didn't know, they did not work on Pokemon Scarlet and Violet.
No, they sure didn't.
And some news was announced. When was this? This was yesterday. So breaking news. Game Freak announced that they are teaming up with the Western publisher Take-Two Interactive, big name right there, for a brand new original action adventure game called, it's a code name Project Bloom. And I'm very excited about this because they have quite the cast of people working on it. They have Kazuma Koda, who is known for his work on games like Nier Automata, Bayonetta 2, Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu, and Fire Emblem the Three Houses. And he's going to be providing a lot of the illustration,
Ooh.
which is fantastic to hear because, as we have seen with those games, I mean, it's just banger after banger, right?
Yep.
And Project Bloom is set to release, no, well into the future. They're estimating around 2026. So, no, 3 years from now.
Oh, so they literally just announced, hey, we're working with somebody now.
Yep. And this is a new IP, which is fantastic.
So yeah.
That Game Freak is going to be stepping out into the foray and doing something other than Pokemon. So
Even
I've.
though
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I think Game Freak is the Pokemon maker, in my opinion, the Pokemon developer. I think they've released some of the best Pokemon games of all time.
Oh, 100% they have.
So to see them bringing a brand new IP to the market, this is somebody I actually would trust,
I would too.
unless it's like one of those, it's a brand new IP, but it's Pokemon adjacent. We're releasing a new Digimon game.
No, it's going to be nothing like that. And I trust this because they're working with Take-Two. So.
Grand Theft Auto 6. Game Freak is making Grand Theft Auto 6. But real quick, do you want to know some titles that are published by Private Division?
Yes. I'm seeing some good ones. What were you able to find?
I'm able to find we have Hades,
Hell yeah.
which you've played.
I love Hades. Such a good game.
We have the Outer Worlds, which I've played.
Outer Worlds is great.
Yep. We have Kerbal Space Program 2. I've never heard of that one.
Neither have I.
We have Rollerdrome, which I remember saying that, didn't care for it. And Ollie Ollie World.
Don't know what that is.
I think that's the musical rhythm game. No, I think I might be wrong. I think that's the, was that a sports game? I think it was a sports game.
Maybe. Yeah, the only titles I recognize is Outer Worlds and Hades.
Yeah, it was a sports game that was released last year. It's kind of weird. I don't know a lot of people who played it. But it got 9 out of 10 score, so it must be good.
I played Outer Worlds. I liked it.
Yeah, I liked Outer Worlds. Hades was massive at the time. I think that this project is in good hands.
I agree.
And I get,
Oh,
as
sorry,
we
go ahead.
always say, take your time in making this. Do not worry about rushing it.
No, do not pull a Cyberpunk 2077 or a Redfall.
Boy, that Redfall thing. Have you played it yet?
No, but I have read and seen all of the negativity surrounding it.
Well, it's been on my list for it's on my list of games to play, but like I'm just gonna wait for the update, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I would wait, Devin. I really would.
Yeah, some games you can buy first, you can download or whatever, but some games are not ready to play until you get that first update. I just don't understand why they're releasing games so early. And apparently neither does Xbox, because Xbox actually had to apologize for
Yes, they
that.
did.
Xbox was like, we are terribly sorry. We didn't realize it was going to be this bad. We are going to make up for it. And I hope that Microsoft, because they've already said that they've lost the console wars. They said that they've lost. There's nothing, that they're never going to win
No,
it.
and
Which,
they unfortunately do lose money on the Xbox Series X sales, and I have seen that Game Pass is kind of struggling to kind of make up the difference.
well, I think if it's like this, because you know the Ford F-150 has been the number one selling pickup trucks for like the last 28, 29
Yes.
years, right? Well, even if Ford, if the F-150 is the number one, does that mean Dodge and Chevy should
No,
stop making
no.
their
And
pickup
I'm not
trucks?
saying that at all.
No. No, and I think that even if you're not the even if you're not the leading competitor, you still need to compete. You still need to bring it to Sony, because had it not been for Microsoft, Sony would not have
No.
innovated. And had it not been for Microsoft, Nintendo would not have innovated.
Exactly.
So I think Microsoft is on the right track, but they need to start worrying about the long run. And I think that with them buying up studios and this Activision Blizzard thing, they're moving in the right direction. And speaking of the Activision Blizzard, we have some
Yes,
news.
there is an update to the acquisition deal finally.
Well, there's not an
Yeah,
official
but there's
update.
more news, I guess I should say.
So, as of May 10th, the European Union decision clearing a $69 billion Microsoft Activision deal expected May 15th. So it looks like the European Union is going to approve it.
Which is good news.
But it's not as good news, because the United Kingdom is still looking like they're going to block it.
Do you think they ultimately will block it, or like what are you thinking?
I think that now the European Union is going to approve it. I think that they can bring that approval to the UK and be like, "Hey, if the European Union is willing to approve it, you guys need to come up with a better argument as to why you're
Yeah.
not." And I think with the EU going to approve it, that might bring to the United States and be like, "You know what? Screw it. There's nothing we can do." So I think we're now leaning more into the favor of them approving it. It's just taking a very, very
Yeah.
long time. But let's talk about something that we haven't talked
We
about in a
actually
minute.
haven't. I'm honestly surprised.
But to be fair, Mason, what was there for us to
I
talk
mean, not a
about?
lot. Let's be real.
But there is today, and the headline from Insider says, "Rest in peace, Metaverse, from 2021 to
We hardly
2023."
knew you.
Is this coming as a surprise to
No.
us? Is this really? Are you
No.
surprised by this?
Not at all. Like, Metaverse died as soon as they announced it, honestly.
I think Metaverse died when it was announced that Meta, also known as Facebook, announced it. Because one, more and more people are moving away from Facebook. More people are moving into TikTok. I think TikTok is the
It
fastest
is.
growing social media
It is.
platform. And Facebook is trying to be everything to everyone. They were trying to do their own cryptocurrency. It didn't work out. They were trying to create their own like VR system. It didn't work out. They were trying to build this metaverse. Clearly, it didn't work out. One of the things I think is it never defined why we should use the
No, it was just like,
metaverse.
hey, here's the metaverse. And they just like flopped it out on the table, and we're just like left wondering, like, okay, what are you gonna do with it?
What are we, why am
Yeah,
I
it's like,
signing into it to
why do
talk,
I
like,
care?
yeah, because I can just video game. I don't need to hop in and be like in weird pixels with no
It's
legs in Facebook's world.
almost like that like that one meme where it's just like, who asked? Who asked?
Yeah, so here's a sentence or two from the Inside article. After a much-heralded debut, the metaverse became the obsession of the tech world and a quick hack to win over Wall Street investors. The hype could not save the metaverse, however, and a lack of coherent vision for the product ultimately led to its decline. Once the tech industry turned to a new, more promising trend, generative AI, the fate of the metaverse was sealed. The metaverse is now headed to the tech industry graveyard of failed ideas. But the short life and ignominious death of the metaverse offers a glaring indictment of the tech industry that birthed it. So the problem is that we have all of these tech, and as we're saying with the retraction of the tech industry, everyone has these grandiose ideas, these life-changing apps, these life-changing tech that's, oh, it's gonna, and at one term I've absolutely grown to hate and with disdain is we're disrupting the industry. No, you are not.
No, you're just
You are.
throwing shit at the wall and hoping it sticks.
And I'm glad the
No, I'm
metaverse
right there with you.
didn't. I'm glad Facebook spent $10 billion to create a less enjoyable Second Life.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You are not wrong.
Honestly, I hate to say it though, but like if anybody was going to do the metaverse, it's going to be EA.
Why do you say that?
There is no one who has better experience with all realms of gaming than EA, in my opinion, because they produce The Sims, which is what most people want out of the metaverse. They produce sports, they produce driving physics, they produce war. If anyone could put it all into one big VR system, I think EA has the level of experience that could do it. Maybe Take-Two, as we've saw that with the Grand Theft Auto series, they can do just a first-person
Yeah.
mode. But I don't know if Take-Two or Rockstar Games specifically would be able to do it in a timely manner, as we've
I
discovered.
see what you're saying, yeah.
We don't have 15 years to wait for our Rockstar Games to produce the metaverse. EA could probably produce that thing in 2.5 years and then abandon it
Oh,
after
that,
6 months.
they could definitely crank it out.
Yeah, but I think that with the article talking about moving towards generative AI, I think that is actually what the key is, because even my company, which is chemical distribution, even the question was asked during our town hall, are we looking into this chat GPT? Are we talking about these generative AIs? How is this going to our
So
business?
speaking on that as well, I know the little insider knowledge here as well about Ford Motor Company. They are also exploring the possibility of AI to try to buttress their business units. How can they use it to cut down waste? How can they use it to increase efficiency, etc. And I do hate to say it, but I do think AI is the future.
I would agree, but I also have to say, just speaking from about Ford as a company, their biggest problem lies in quality
Yes,
control.
100%, especially now because we're experiencing just a plethora of just part shortages, part issues, part constraints, you name it. And the decision comes from the top, right? When you have the top saying, okay, well, we're out of X, Y, and Z important part that is crucial to the production of this vehicle. But then you have them say, you know what? Let's continue building and have it sit in a lot for months and months and months
Great
and
idea.
then fix it later.
Great idea. And then plus with them releasing these brand new models and updating their vehicles, you hear about, oh, there's a recall. Or I know that the F-150 Lightning, which is their electric pickup truck, had a fire risk problem that they actually had to stop
Yep,
production
I
over.
heard about that.
And if you're releasing a truck that starts at
Whew.
$75,000, and you have a fire risk problem, come
Yeah,
on now.
that's a problem.
But I did on the last podcast, iCamelia and I were discussing, and I mentioned that I think generative AI would really do well in video games, because if you've played a Bethesda
Yeah.
game before, and you know how the dialogue options are not
They
great,
are not.
and generally the response to the dialogue is usually the same. I think that's where generative AI can really benefit video games, especially in the RPG realm. Because, like, all right, here's my response. You generate a response to that. Like, we're actually having an actual conversation. But we will see what that brings about.
Yeah, we will. We will. I don't know if this is kind of a tangent, but do you partake in South Park at all?
I used to. The humor is very lowbrow. There's nothing wrong with the humor, but sometimes I'm like, I really shouldn't watch
Yeah, well,
this.
the reason why I bring it up in our AI conversation is because they just did an episode recently where they poke fun at ChatGPT, and it was fan fucking tastic. It was great. I loved it.
I'll have to
Yeah.
check that out. Make sure you send me the
Yeah,
meme of the episode.
it's pretty comical.
All right, so let's move over to something that's not comical. Let's talk about a video game turned into a TV
Yeah.
series, and that is Twisted Metal. Now, the trailer, the
Yeah,
teaser trailer at
it came
least.
out fairly recently.
Yep, and starring Anthony
Yep.
Mackie. And I have to say, I'm gonna watch
Oh,
this. I'm gonna
dude,
absolutely.
same. The trailer makes it look super interesting.
Yes, but I was assuming that when it was announced that Anthony Mackie was going to be doing the character, I was under the impression that he was going to be doing Axel from Twisted Metal. Do you
Yeah,
remember
he was the
Axel?
dude with the two wheels and everything.
That's who I assumed was going that Anthony Mackie was going to play. But no, he's just a regular dude driving a Subaru WRX with
Yep.
guns on it. Really cool, but just
Yeah,
surprising.
and so I'm ashamed, not ashamed, but I'm just bummed out that Twisted Metal couldn't be a movie first. But if you want to see like a Twisted Metal-esque movie, I would highly recommend watching Death Race.
I knew you were going to say Death Race.
It's actually a good movie. I don't care what anybody says. I enjoyed it.
No. I think it's a great movie with Jason Statham. I actually thoroughly
Yeah,
enjoyed that movie,
I
and I
mean,
think it's
say what you will about
great.
Jason Statham. He's a fairly good action star. I don't care what you say.
Yeah, but it seems like recently he's
He
fallen off,
has.
because at one like I remember like at one point like he was the
Yeah, he was
top
like the
guy.
go-to action guy.
Liam Neeson at one point was the go-to action guy. And I sent you guys the trailer. There's going to be The Meg 2 and
Yes.
starring Jason
That movie
Statham.
looks so ridiculous.
It looks so dumb, but I'm going to
Yeah,
watch
turn my brain off and
it.
watch it.
That's the key. Now, let's move over to another movie, Mortal Kombat
Yes.
2. I, and Chameleon have talked about this over and over and over again. Ad
Yeah,
nauseum.
we had an
Who's going to be who?
episode in the past where we talked about like casting decisions for like Johnny Cage.
And I think the universal consensus was either The Miz or Tom
Yeah,
Cruise.
because I think there was even a fan poll, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, and I think The Miz
Yeah,
ended up
the
winning
Miz
out.
ended up winning out that poll, and I want to say like John Cena was in the mix there too.
Okay, that one I could probably see a little bit more. But I think The Miz, I think that was absolutely accurate. But do you know who probably was not accurate?
Oh, yeah, I know what you're gonna say.
So, listeners of the Uninformed Gamers, it has been
Oh
rumored
no,
that the
it's
person
confirmed.
playing.
It is
Is it
confirmed.
confirmed? Well, it's been confirmed that the person playing Johnny Cage is Carl Urban. And if that name does not sound familiar, think of The Boys.
Yes.
This one was a surprise. I think that this was incorrect
casting. Yeah, all right, so I like Carl Urban as an actor. I do. I think he did great in The Boys, but he is not Johnny Cage. I'm sorry.
No. And everybody I'm reading says that. His age shouldn't be an issue either. Cage could be an older actor in Mortal Kombat 2, or Urban can look like he's in his 30s. Casting him isn't a bad decision. The problem is The Miz was a better option.
Yes, I agree. And it seems like the choice of Carl Urban seems, for me, you know, outside looking in, they want to go for a more, like, serious take on Johnny.
But Johnny Cage is not a serious video game character.
He's a goofy goober.
Yeah, he's a goofy goober. Honestly, I think that Carl Urban absolutely should have definitely played like the Australian dude.
Kane.
Kano. He looks more like Kano.
I agree with that, actually. Yeah.
Than he does Johnny Cage. And I know we're probably like, we're not giving him his opportunity. It's just, the problem is, The Miz is there, but actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I think I know why The Miz couldn't have been included.
Why?
I don't know if The Miz is a big enough actor.
He's more known as the wrestler.
Yeah, and at least Carl Urban actually has The Boys. I think he was in Judge Dredd.
He was, yeah, he was.
Okay, so he does have a bigger repertoire than The Miz. It just kind of sucks, because that's all we all wanted. But let's go ahead. Let's change it up. Good luck to Carl Urban.
I'll reserve my judgment for when the movie comes out. I'm definitely going to see it, because I saw the first one and I did enjoy it. I thought it was well done. Definitely better than the original movies, which isn't saying much, but
I mean, the original movies were fun.
Yeah. I will say, though, the original movies had a better soundtrack.
All right. No reason to hate. But you know what? Speaking of movies, which is a quick sidebar. So, you know, one of the biggest roles that everybody's curious about who the casting is going to be.
Yes.
It's James Bond. Well, apparently, I guess one of the producers or writers or whatever of James Bond has said that if you have heard a rumor about an actor being the next
Bond,
that means that person is not going to be.
Oh, wow. Really? Okay.
So he was just like, every name that you've heard up to this point is not going to be James Bond. And one of the reasons they pointed out, they said, we look at Daniel Craig. When we chose Daniel Craig, no one assumed Daniel Craig would do it. They said he's not the right guy. He's blonde. He's too young. And look, he ended up blowing up the series. Mm-hmm. So they said, stop trying to guess who the next James Bond is going to be, because you're not going to guess it. So they're
fair.
It's not going to be Idris. They're like, it's not going to be Idris. It's not going to be Jillian. It's not going to be, who played Bane?
What's his face from, Tom Hardy.
It's not going to be Tom Hardy. It's not going to be Tom Hiddleston. They said, just stop guessing. Every name that you've heard this far is not going to be James Bond. So maybe they're looking for the right casting, and maybe Mortal Kombat knows what they're doing, but we'll see. But I want to get into something that we talk a little bit about the Zelda games. Apparently, the Den of Geek has ranked every Legend of Zelda from worst to best. And you know what? I don't know if I disagree with this list. I think that this is a very fair list.
Yeah, let me open it up and take a gander as well.
While you're opening it up, I will tell the listeners, currently there are about 19 Legend of Zelda games, which I didn't know there were that many.
There's a ton.
But it is messed up that the game that's the worst game on this list is one of the ones that I played and I enjoy it. I don't remember how I acquired this game, but I actually did own this. So we'll start at number 19. Do you have it pulled up?
Yes, I do.
So the worst Legend of Zelda game, at least by Den of Geek standards, is The Legend of Zelda four swords.
I remember when this came out because it was like one of the first handheld, I believe, Game Boy Advance.
Yep,
Game Boy Advance. It did multiplayer.
You could play with four other people, and that was so cool. And even if you played it by yourself, you just had three other links joining you. I thought it was a fun game.
Concept for sure.
But unfortunately, the way the Den of Geeks goes ahead and says is that there's just not much here. Four Swords is a fun little distraction competing against true epics and more importantly, games that expand upon pretty much all of its basic concepts. Still, it's a testament to the quality of the franchise that this fundamentally fun game is this low. So he said it's fun, it just doesn't add anything to the story. And I'm like, I can see that.
It came out in 2002, so...
I mean... 2002 was a great year for video games, but I give it away. So number 18, The Legend of Zelda, Triforce Heroes.
I remember Triforce. This is not a co-op game, correct?
They said it's a standalone co-op Zelda title.
It offers
both local and online
multiplayer options. Gotcha.
And they say here, unfortunately, accessibility really is one of the biggest things this game is going for it. Its co-op campaign is filled with creative multiplayer puzzles, though some of them feel a little forced. Too much of this game feels designed to showcase the novelty of its multiplayer gimmicks rather than to explore how the gimmicks can enhance already great puzzles. So they're basically saying that, yeah, it's a co-op game, but that's really it. That's only really going for it. And they said, to make matters worse, Triforce Heroes single-player mode is painfully imbalanced, and the game doesn't even let you play with two players. Your options are three or one.
Oh, okay, that's weird.
That is very strange, but I guess Zelda has learned their lessons. Number 17, The Legend of Zelda, Four Swords Adventure. So we can kind of see a trend.
Yeah, it like Nintendo was experimenting with multiplayer / co-op concepts with Zelda for sure.
Is The Legend of Zelda, is this, let's be honest here, is this a multiplayer game or a co-op game?
Theoretically, it was supposed to be, right?
It could have been, but I think what Legend of Zelda has turned into now, I think it's better as a standalone
by itself.
Just how I think God of War is a better standalone game. I mean,
for sure.
So then, followed by the number 16, The Legend of Zelda, Oracle of Seasons.
Never heard of this, actually.
I have never heard of this until I went to this
article. I do not know what this game is.
Released in 2001 for the Game Boy Color, Oracle of Seasons was a companion piece for Oracle of Ages. The idea was that players would link both games together in order to create a kind of shared adventure from two standalone titles. Indeed, those two games often share a spot on lists such as this due to the similarities. However, they are different games. Oracle of Seasons' main gimmick is the ability to change the current in-game season, though the mechanic is largely used for puzzle-solving purposes. Oracle of Seasons is actually one of the more action-focused games in the Zelda franchise. That emphasis on combat makes Oracle of Seasons one of the better gateway Zelda games. It's not necessarily easy or simple, but it is a stunning, beautiful, straight-ahead example of many of the things that initially draw people to the Zelda titles. See, I've never heard of this one. I think it was just kind of like released and then
play.
15 is Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link.
Yep, the old-school one.
The Adventure of Link is often considered the black sheep of the Zelda franchise. There's never been another Zelda game quite like the strange blend of 2D action, JRPG interactions, and platforming, and there probably never will be.
Yeah, and then looks like number 14 is the sequel to Wind Waker, which is The Legend of Zelda, The Phantom Hourglass, which I never played this one. I played Wind Waker. And it's like, I don't know, the article is saying that it is a sequel to Wind Waker, but it's also not a sequel to Wind Waker.
There goes Nintendo not being clear with directions.
They're just like, oh, it is and isn't. I'm like, wait, what? But
yeah, I don't know what exactly this is.
But yeah, I never played it, so I can't really touch on it. But they have number 13 as Oracle of Ages, Legend of Zelda, which is the, is this the sequel to Oracle of Seasons?
Yep, this is the one that you would link to Oracle.
I got you. Never played it.
Its biggest weakness is its use of a time travel mechanic. The time travel idea is implemented well enough, but it's pretty familiar in the grand scheme of the Zelda franchise compared to the ability to change seasons. That same gimmick arguably made Oracle of Seasons the better looking of the two games as well.
Oh, okay. And then we have a familiar entry with number 12 with Skyward Sword.
See, the problem with Skyward Sword was the Wii U.
Yeah, because let's be honest, the Wii U was kind of like a weird console.
Because and I was reading the book about with Reggie, Phyllis Ames, and he was talking about how the problem was they never really defined what the Wii U was supposed to be.
No, it was like a hodgepodge of stuff.
What Reggie said is that it was meant to be a brand new console, but a lot of people just assumed it was an accessory for the Wii, and they just didn't buy it. And so Skyward Sword, which was the Zelda game for Wii U, kind of got an unfair shake.
I heard it was good. I personally never played it, but I heard it was very good.
So at the time of its release, Skyward Sword's uneven pacing and walking motion controls frustrated many fans. The latter problem was partially addressed by the game's Switch remaster, but the start and stop pacing, filler content, and annoying design decisions, most notably Fi, remain some of the game's most notable flaws.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Then at number 11, we have The Legend of Zelda.
I just love the first sentence on this one.
Yeah, the first sentence is, it honestly felt like there was no great spot for The Legend of Zelda on these rankings. Should it automatically grab a higher spot due to its obvious historical significance? Or have the many ways this franchise has improved upon this title's major concepts knocked it down a few notches? Who knows? But
honestly, I'm going to say it should have knocked it down a few notches, and here's why. Look at Assassin's Creed 1. If you look at Assassin's Creed 1 now, Assassin's Creed 1 will never exist in the top 10 of Assassin's Creed
games. Yeah, but I understand where they're going or coming from, because it's the progenitor of the Zelda franchise. You know, it is the first one. It's what led to everything. So I get it. You know, you want that in there for the historical significance. Same goes with Super Mario Brothers or Mega Man, Castlevania, Metroid, etc.
But even with Super Mario Brothers, I could have swore Super Mario Brothers 3 was the best one. Well, I don't know if people would say Super Mario Brothers 1 was the worst, but I guess it's just dealer's choice on that one.
And then we get into the top 10 with a Nintendo DS entry in Spirit Tracks. I never heard about this actually.
I remember hearing about this, but I never played it, and I don't know a single person.
Yeah, same. So we'll move on to number 9, and arguably, when it came out, I think this should be placed a little bit higher. We're talking on The Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess. I do think this should have been placed higher.
I just think it should have been in the top 5.
I agree.
And the reason why I like the direction that this game took the series.
It was very edgy, kind of darker.
Mature type.
Yeah, wasn't like the kiddie Legend of Zelda that we've come to know and expect.
And here's what they say. Released in the wake of the Wind Waker controversy, Twilight Princess was seen as something of an apology by many Zelda fans. It was that darker Zelda adventure that fans had clamored for, yet while dark is often the word that some still use to describe Twilight Princess' tone and attributes, the word I prefer to use is haunting. The Wolf Link section of the game failed to live up to their potential, and Twilight Princess' massive world is tragically barren. Large sections of the game feel like filler, and the game's mini high require you to endure some notable lows. Twilight Princess was never really the dream game some wanted to hype up to be, but its nightmarish interpretation of the Zelda universe remains effective and alluring. I think it's higher.
I'm curious. I'm sure they'll explain it later on for their number one pick, but I'm very curious what they mean when they say released in the wake of the Wind Waker controversy. I wasn't aware of any controversy surrounding that game.
I do remember, so when it first came out, I do remember that a lot of people did not like how
Oh,
cartoony it
okay. I
was.
thought that was one of the things that actually drew me to the game. That's one of the reasons why I actually picked up the game, was because of how it
Yep, and
looked. I thought it was super interesting.
that was Nintendo's whole thought process that, hey, let's do cartoony, let's do bright
Yeah.
colors. And a lot of people were felt that that's not what Legend
I
of
thought it
Zelda
was
is,
really
and
dope.
that's what gets Princess. All right. Number eight, I've never heard of this.
I've heard of it, but again, like I never played it. It's the Legend of Zelda, the Minish Cap.
The most popular knock against Minish Cap is its short length. While I can't argue against the numbers, depending on your experience level, you can beat Minish Cap in 10 to 15 hours, if not less. That's really
Yeah,
short for
for
a Zelda
sure. Like
game.
you can beat it in a day or two.
Yep. Let's move on down to number
So
seven.
this should be in the
I
top
don't.
five.
I think this should be in the top five as well. And we're talking about The Legend of Zelda: Majora's Mask. For quite some time, Majora's Mask was known as the Groundhog's Day Legend of Zelda game. Now we know it is a time loop game, which genre that has been significantly more common since this game released. Despite a significant increase in competition, Majora's Mask still feels like one of the best examples of that
And
concept.
it was very revolutionary in that regard, implementing that interesting storyline.
Yep. Having said that, the act of playing Majora's Mask can put a smut on the shiniest memories of it. This is a pretty clunky game, and not all the struggles can be attributed to the ambition of its concept. The game is sometimes cruel in ways that don't always feel like an extension of the natural repetition of the game. Even still, it's hard to see this as anything less than an ambitious piece
Oh,
of
yeah.
art.
Then
Okay.
number six, we have the one of the latest entries in the franchise with Breath of the Wild, which I do
Now,
agree with the placement of number six. I do agree.
I thought this was going to be
I
higher, to be
thought it
honest
would,
with you. And the
yeah, with
reason I
recency
say,
bias.
yeah, with recency bias, that is exactly it. I thought it was going to be the
Yeah,
highest
I
one.
did too, but I'm actually happy where it did get placed. I think this is very fair.
One of the most divisive Zelda games ever made, Breath of the Wild isn't quite the undisputed masterpiece its biggest advocates would have you think it is. Right from the start, many longtime Zelda fans question this game's embrace of open-world survival concepts and its shunning of so many classic Zelda traditions. Truth be told, Breath of the Wild will sometimes leave you clamoring for the security of some of those franchise staples. All right, well, that's unfortunate, but let's move on down to number five, The Legend of Zelda: Link's Awakening.
So
Can't
what
wait for
reminds
it.
me about this, I never played it, but what it reminds me of is the Legend of Zelda American cartoon. I don't know if you ever
Oh my God, I
I
do
don't know if you
remember
remember it came out in
that.
1989, and it is home to the very popular and memeable segment where Link says, "Well, excuse me, princess."
That was like suppressed in my memories until you reminded me that there was a
But it's just
cartoon.
the screen grab photo that they chose to use reminds me of the cartoon.
Yep. Going next, we have in the fourth spot, The Legend of Zelda: A Link Between
Never played
Worlds.
it.
Again, don't remember this one at all. A Link Between Worlds uses familiarity as the bedrock of Link's most original and daring adventures ever. While the game is clearly modeled after A Link to the Past, it's almost a remake in some ways. Between Worlds alters numerous aspects of the Zelda formula. Famous franchise conventions, such as acquiring important items solely through dungeons, are removed or replaced. A Link Between Worlds forces you to retain your Zelda brain, which seems to be the biggest thing about it that some fans just can't get behind.
And then number three, I
Interesting.
actually really liked this entry to the franchise and played it a lot, was A Link to the Past.
Yep, I can see this one being
Oh
in the
yeah,
top three.
I agree with this placement. Now, for the top two, I personally would have these flipped. That's my take, because here number two is Ocarina of Time.
Which I think that we I wouldn't want I'm gonna agree with you. I think Ocarina of Time is probably the best Legend of Zelda game of
Yeah,
all time.
because it's not only iconic after all this time, it's heralded as probably one of, if not the best Nintendo 64 game.
I appreciate their very first like paragraph. For those who did not experience it for themselves, it's difficult to describe the feeling of seeing and playing Ocarina of Time for the first time. We'd seen grand adventures before, and we'd recently been treated to the movie-like cinematic experiences, such as PS1 Final Fantasy games, but Ocarina of Time was different. It was a grand cinematic adventure that could be freely explored. From the moment you heard that haunting title screen music for the first time, you cross Hyrule Field. You found yourself instinctively repeating, how is this possible? And I think that's it. I think Ocarina of Time existed in a time of video games where it was so revolutionary.
Yeah, for open world.
For open world, that will almost always exist in the top 10 of Nintendo games of all time.
100%. And then obviously number one, we talked about it earlier, is Wind Waker.
I think this should be in the top three.
Yeah, I think I would place Wind Waker at either number two or three.
I would place Wind Waker at number three. I would place A Link to the Past at number two. I would place Ocarina of Time at number one. I would place Majora's Mask at number four. And I would play Twilight Princess at number five.
That is a fair ranking.
And then I would put Breath of Wild at number... Well, Breath of Wild is number six. So Breath of Wild is the other one that's still in the right place.
I still agree with that placement for sure.
And I'm not saying that Breath of Wild is a bad game. I'm just saying that the other Zeldas were all revolutionary in their own way. And I don't know if Breath of the Wild was as revolutionary as the Princess was, going from the cartoony to the mature and then back to the cartoony again. So yeah, I think that overall, I think that was a very good ranking. I'm actually very happy with the results. Before we end our segment, do you have any final reviews or any final thoughts you'd like to give us?
I guess the final thing I will leave you with is the makers of Genshin Impact, aka Hoyoverse, have released a new entry into their kind of universe called Honkai Star Rail, apparently. And it looks fairly interesting. I plan on checking it out at some point. So if you are a fan of Genshin or their games, check it out.
All right. Well, you've already heard my review of the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. It's going to get a 4.5 uninformed gamer score out of 5. As always, we thank you so much for joining us for another installment of the Uninformed Gamers. If you like what we do here, you can find us at Twitter at Uninformed Gamers or TikTok at Uninformed Gamers. If you wish to connect with me, Darkness Tiger, directly, I am Darkness Tiger on Xbox and Darkness Tiger 2 on PlayStation 5, which again, I haven't booted up in months.
Jeez.
I don't see the purpose. Like I don't have the time. All right, Rad Dreams, go ahead and give your sign off.
As always, guys, I have been Mason, also known as Rad Dreams. You can check me out on Twitch, Rad_Dreams, or on YouTube at Rad Dreams Review.
Be sure to give us a like and subscribe. We will catch y'all next time. Bye.
Later.